Arkansas Cinema Society's Filmland kicked off yesterday and continues through Sunday. In addition to film screenings, ACS is hosting workshops and conversations, like a free criminal justice reform panel discussion that begins at 4 Saturday afternoon at the MacArthur Park Parade Grounds in Little Rock. It will feature a group of panelists, including today's guest, Ruby Welch, the founder and executive director of FELIN, which stands for Formerly Incarcerated Empowered Leaders Overcoming Negative Stigmas. She's also the organizer for Dream Corps Justice.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. To begin with, I would love to know how your personal experiences have inspired the work that you're doing today.
I would hope that my personal experiences have inspired and I continue to inspire people because I myself am formerly incarcerated. I served 7 years, 5 months, and 6 days in the Arkansas Department of Corrections. But while incarcerated, I kept seeing women come back and back and back. And they were always asking me, when did you get back? And I never left. And I was there on a drug charge, less than 12 grams of crack cocaine. And I was sentenced to 30 years. And I just said, I got to do something. I got to do something. I got to make a change when I get home, not for myself, but more so for the women that were stuck in this revolving door. And so I just came home and just started allowing God to order my steps, you know, sitting at the right tables, attempting to meet the right people, listening more than talking, because I realized that if anybody was going to be a voice for the women that were behind those walls, it was going to have to be somebody that had been behind those walls, that had experienced what they aren't saying to the media. And so I hope that from where I've been and what I've been through and where I am now and where I'm going inspires others to realize that even though you committed a crime, it doesn't make you a criminal.
So when did you decide to start Formerly Incarcerated Empowered Leaders Overcoming Negative Stigmas, FELIN for short, and what is some of the work and programming that you do through that organization?
FELIN came to me when I was still incarcerated. It's like 2004, because I didn't come home until like 2006. I'm one of those people that I feel that anything negative has a positive side to it. So I went into prayer and, you know, I was like, I was going to use my initials because my initials spell wrong. So I started with writing all wrongs. And I was like, nah, that don't sound right. And then I was like, FELIN, you know, God, give me something for this. And he was like, well, you know, I was reading where how we are overcomers, you know. And I said, yeah, formerly incarcerated, empowered leaders overcoming negative stigmas, because people put stigmas on you that are negative, that just because you've been incarcerated, you know, people want to say that you can't work here, you can't live here, you know, and it was so many stigmas that I needed to be able to break first for myself in order to allow other people to see that they too can do the same thing as I've done. And that's where it started, was in prison. And what I do with FELIN is I've created a program. It's a 10-step program. One is for men and it's called Healing His Heart. And the other one is for women. It's called Healing Her Heart. And so the 10-step actually spells out hallelujah. So, which is the highest praise, because then after you heal, you need to accept, you know, you need to learn how to love. You need to listen. We need to get excited, then we need to be joyful, then we need to understand. And then after that, we need to go out and help someone else. So I just basically tell people my story, and then I'll allow them to write down stories about themselves. You know, how are you going to heal? Nobody has to read this. I explain to them. No one has to know what you're writing down. I just need you to be honest with yourself, because the only way that you're going to heal is that you're going to have to just get just naked and be not ashamed. I also, every year for Christmas, I choose either ACC, which is a Arkansas Community Correction Center, or either I choose a prison that I gift them with gift bags, with goodies, toiletries, and things of this nature for Christmas, because Christmas is one of the loneliest times of being incarcerated. So I bring a little cheer to them during that time of the year. But I'm a resource. They're like, when people come out of jail, out of prison, they call me and I set them up how to get insurance, phones, food stamps, SNAP, which is SNAP. And then I have a gentleman that has a grant that he gives them $325 to start them out coming home, whatever their needs are. I help them with housing, clothes, everything that I had to go through because it wasn't there for me. Because like I said, I came home in 2006. I was locked up from 1999 to 2006. So of course, Obamacare wasn't in place. So me being a widow, because my husband got killed 6 months before I went to prison. And so me being a widow with no children, I was unable to get insurance. And I was very, very ill. So all of these things led to me saying, I've got to make a way for everybody else to do this. So my name and my number, my actual personal number is on the walls up at the county jail. I put my number out on Facebook and I allow people to just call me no matter what time, day or night, for me to guide them along this way, because I can tell you how to go back to prison, but I can actually show you how to stay out. So just being the person that they can look at and see and have some hope that if Ruby did it, I can do it.
What wonderful work you're doing. What meaningful work. You're going to get to discuss a little bit of that on October 2nd during a criminal justice panel discussion as part of Filmland, which is hosted by the Arkansas Cinema Society. Earlier on in our conversation, you mentioned speaking and being a voice for the women who are incarcerated and saying things perhaps that they don't tell the media. What are some of those things that they aren't telling the media? What are some of those things that we don't know that we do need to know about what needs to happen for this reform to happen?
That goes back to one of the, probably one of the most beloved things to my heart is the dignity bill for incarcerated women that was passed in the state of Arkansas through Cut 50, which is now / Dream Corps. When I was in prison, I had fibroid tumors and they had grown and grown and grown. And I don't know if you know about fibroid tumors, but they make you bleed constantly. So my body never got rest, and they only give you a certain amount of hygiene products or pads at the beginning of each month. And if someone was caught giving you pads or, well, in just about anything, but this is a definite need for women, your hygiene, but you could get a major dysmenorrhea, which would set you back and keep you in prison longer. So that was one of the things that the dignity bill made possible to happen, that now in the systems that when women need feminine hygiene, soap, toothpaste, whatever, they can just ask for it and they'll receive it. And you don't have to write grievances because, I mean, and I thought it was so insane that you'd have to write a grievance to take a shower if it wasn't shower time, if it was like the middle of the day. But if you've messed up your clothes and you need to go clean yourself up, you know, you had to go get permission to even get in the shower. I didn't like the fact that, you know, women with children weren't able to bond with their children, especially those women that birthed their children inside the prison walls. You know, they snatched the child as soon as the baby's born, and somebody needs to be there to take the baby. So now in Wrightsville, Arkansas, at the women's unit, the Hutton's unit, they have a lactating room. So the women are able to pump their breasts every day and freeze it. And on the weekends, when the babies come in, they're actually able to go into the room and physically breastfeed their child. So that's a bonding that goes on. That was a need. And some of the other things that go on is just that I have to ask people all the time when they talk about, oh, there's so many drugs in the prison system and this is corrupt. Well, my question is, well, how do you think all of that's getting in there? Because, I mean, I couldn't go outside and go down the street and purchase drugs and come back. So that's one of the things we need to highlight and make people really, really look at and become honest about, that there are people working for the system who are actually keeping people chained to the system and a prisoner to the prison by bringing drugs inside and keeping them addicted. And I think that's something that needs to be changed. And that's something that I'll bring attention to. I mean, there's so many stories I could tell you that go on behind the walls of prison. The inhumane, people feel that, I know I committed a crime and I know I was responsible for the crime that I committed. But when you have people yelling at you and, you know, just doing certain things out of spite, you know, writing you up to keep you in prison longer because they're having a bad hair day or something's going on wrong in their household and they're bringing their problems to their job. Because even now, I mean, I still struggle with some of the trauma that happened when I was in prison. People don't realize that we do have trauma from prison. I mean, I'm still on parole and I've been home 15 years because I also have, they gave me a restitution of $15,000, which I didn't understand that, but I still pay on it and whatnot. So I'm still not free. So one mistake can send me back to prison. So that's stressful to me also. The mental health is not there for those, and myself included, that need the help. I had to learn how to heal myself while I was being held hostage. And it was painful. It was painful. So these are some of the things that need to change behind the prison walls, allowing people to come in from the outside, especially the mental health community. They need to come in and be able to speak with the women and ask the questions, you know, well, what brought you here? And what can we do to ensure that once you go home, you don't return here? Because that's correction. That's correction, unless you want the cycle to continue. And so those are some of the things that, you know, I, for one, am really continuing to put in the forefront of our government, that there needs to be a balance in everything that we do. Of course, make us responsible for the wrongs that we've done. But please, please, please don't make us pay for it for the rest of our life. Because I'm quite sure that everyone has done something. Some didn't get caught. Let's think about what we're saying and what we're doing and who we are. So how are you holding so many other people hostage to something that they did 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago? Ms. Antoinette, that ought not to be. That ought not to be. There has to come a day when I feel free, just free.
Well, Ms. Ruby, it has been a pleasure to meet you, and I have so enjoyed listening to you share your story. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.